The following is an emergency alert. A category DS-106 storm is approaching your area. This warning is in effect until further notice. Expect heavy blogging, storytelling, and scattered social media. Please stand by for updates.
"106 Bullets, Episode 14. Welcome to the DS-106 Good Spell. Mantras and koans that delve into the open online course Digital Storytelling 106. Digging into DS-106 from the angle of Mariana Funes's string of 106 pearls of wisdom. I am John Johnson, and at the other end of a Skype call is Mariana Funes.
We've got Christina, yep. We've got Christina listening too. Hi, Christina.
Tonight, sorry, I'm just a wee way with it, looking at these wee buttons and things on Nicecast and getting myself fairly confused, as usual. Tonight, we're going to be talking about something dear to my heart, and your quote today is, "Sometimes it's wise to blog against how you are feeling."
That was, it was one of my bullets.
Maybe puzzle people, because it puzzled me a wee bit, because usually you blog, blogging is considered by many this sort of stream of consciousness, whatever going through your mind, very much your own thoughts. So why is it wise to blog against how you're feeling?
It was Gardner Campbell who said that, and before we came, we came on air, I was trying to look for the quote and to see if we could play it, but I couldn't locate it. It was at one of the many different conference speech, presentations that he does. But it was him who said it at the end of a talk, and it was around the idea that often he felt negative, or he felt that maybe there were issues with open learning, etc., but that he had learned over the years that it was sometimes wise to blog against how you're feeling in order to make yourself feel better, i.e. so if you saw a problem, then it was good to, instead of getting, "Oh my God, I feel terrible about this problem," that it was good to maybe just sit down, write a blog that actually talked about what might be the solution. And I just thought that was such a lovely idea. And for me, the reason why it was one of my 106 bullets, it was because it was the first time that I had this kind of insight that you could use blogging in a therapeutic way, in the way that I suppose I might recommend people to, use, any kind of writing in a therapeutic way. So that's the background to it.
So that's stepping into your professional territory, maybe this idea of being therapeutic. Now, an awful lot of people might think that kind of writing should be stuck in a private journal, maybe hidden under a pile of books somewhere in your home so that other people don't see it. And so you're saying transfer this to the open web?
Mm. Well, I suppose it depends on, the kind, if you are feeling, if your feelings are, if you're feeling negative about something that is going on in terms of what you're doing in the context of learning in the open web, then I suppose it makes sense to do it that way, because you make yourself feel better and maybe you suggest some ideas. I guess you have to use your common sense about what you choose to to blog about and what feelings you choose to blog about. And actually that probably goes into, a different topic, which, it starts to talk about the kind of how free should we feel or do we feel to talk about how we're feeling in the context of our blog and in the context of, social media in general. But the intention, I think, here was to say, you could use it in order to be part of the solution rather than the problem.
Mm. Yeah. Probably a good a good tip in general for things, but and I think in education especially, there's always things to complain about, and I certainly spent an awful lot of my time as a teacher moaning about this or that or the next thing. So maybe just writing or thinking about the solution can turn you around a wee bit, make you think a wee bit more cheerfully. And you're talking here too about narrating your work?
Well, I suppose that this bullet was really about, you know, the kind of the whole emphasis that we put on DS106 on blogging. I mean, whether you're blogging against how you're feeling, whether you're blogging your process in terms of having, you know, made some kind of digital artifact, whatever you're doing, we do put a hell of a lot of emphasis on making sure that you use your blog not just to post the stuff you make, but that we also do this thing of, you know, writing up assignments like a blogging champ. and that part of that is about narrating our work and kind of showing our workings, really, not just posting the stuff that you've made, but talk about how you made it. And I was reviewing the that blog post. I think it's Alan Levine's around the writing up assignments like a blogging champ. I was reviewing that today before we started, and I thought, actually, you know, it's interesting because what it says, it's not just about posting the artifact or whatever you've made, but it is also about, you know, telling us the story about it, as well as telling us the how, you know, so how did you make it? And the kind of, you know, and what's the story? How did you come to it? One of the, between you and me and the million of listeners we have.
Our millions of listeners, yeah.
One of the nice things about not formally, so the fact that we are now, you know, we ended our Headless 13 kind of formal experience, and now I'm just, you know, doing the S106 informally, as it were. The nice thing is, of course, that we sometimes can just post the stuff and not narrate our work.
Yeah, yeah. I must say, sometimes it takes the length of time it takes to do something.
Yes,
yeah, exactly. You haven't got the energy by the end of it to narrate an awful lot, and that's, I guess, an area I struggle with. I can quite often manage to describe the steps and do a how-to, but it's the wherefore or the whys and how these things echo that's maybe harder to write about, certainly for myself. Yes. And you see some people who are just great at it.
I was reading one of the Wire 106 Daily Creates this week, and there was an example, and of course I'm not going to find it and I'm not going to remember exactly who it was, but it was an example of just what you're saying, and somebody that had actually the whole blog post just took you on this little journey about how this person found this image, that image, and then that, and how they decided they would blend it together. And it really was a lovely example of exactly what you're saying, to sort of just tell the story, then show what it is that you've made, and then talk about the how, which is often how we talk about it. And I'm just looking at Twitter, and I think we've managed to confuse our millions of listeners, because there Rochelle is asking, is it spelled 106 or 106 spelled, if we're going to be using a hashtag?
Oh no.
Oh no!
Yeah. Which is the canonical hashtag?
So I think I'll over to you.
Yeah,
to make a decision.
Well, no idea who started this conversation early. I think it was Rochelle that suggested it, wasn't it? So whatever you like, Rochelle, I think would be the answer. And probably spell 106 if that was what we started. I'll probably end up using both, and my whole tweets will consist of hashtags and the URL, and no useful narration in between. Yep.
A lot of this whole notion of, you know, blogging, I think, you know, often it's looked at from the perspective of, I guess, educational technology, because, you know, the people involved. One of the things that for me it's really interesting is, of course, that the idea of narrating your work and the idea of telling the story is something that, you know, I do a lot with people in my kind of day job. When I talk about critical reflection, when I talk about, you know, action inquiry, when I talk about kind of, you know, questioning yourself and changing how you are, you know, really what you're saying to people is you need to attend to your thought process. You need to attend to, you know, what's going on and where the limitations might be and so on. And what was really nice for me when I started to do more around, you know, blogging and how to do it, is that it's another tool that can enable people to do that, to start to become more self-aware, really, which I find really interesting as an idea.
Yeah, I think that maybe for me, one of the things that I like about blogging is if I've got an idea and I've got to explain it to other people, I've got to understand it myself. And quite often in the process of writing a blog post, and I'm not thinking particularly of DS106 blog posts, just blogging in general, you know, I think this, that, or the next thing, and in trying to spell that out, I discover maybe some of the nuances and things that I really, really hold and believe, or sometimes halfway through you realise that this is, you know, some belief you've held is not actually true. But I think the actual process of thinking about it and trying to get it into words is quite important. And I'm saying that as somebody who is, although I spend a lot of time blogging, I'm not, writing doesn't come naturally to me. And
so in that case, it must have meant a lot for you to be one of the good examples in the blogging like a champ.
Oh, I didn't know it was.
I haven't looked at that for a while. If you look at the kind of writing up assignments, yeah. I found you today, and if you look it up, and there is a subsection in the blogging, you know, blogging like a champ, that says, have you got any examples? And you remember your Brigadoon video and the post that you wrote.
I remember the video
about that. It's that one is put up there as an example of best practice in blogging.
The best practice of DS106 blogging is to try and pull as many people's legs as possible, and especially Jim Groom and Alan Levine's, which was the whole point of the Brigadoon thing.
I think that the reason why they put it in there as a good example was because it wasn't that you just posted the video and everybody had a good laugh, but that actually the whole blog post talks about this whole thing of saying, you know, this is how I did it. This is how I came to think about it, and here is the actual thing I made. So there you go. You are our example post, blog post.
An example to us all. Yeah, that's. Maybe one of the things about blogging in a closed environment like DS106 is that you can be. And I mean closed environment, I know it's an open environment, but you know, you're likely, your readers are going to be people who are involved, and you can be allude to things and be a wee bit more playful with things as you go. I mean, I haven't made many posts on the Wire 106 stuff, but everyone I have, the title has been taken from an episode, and my headings going through it are taken from an episode, but I don't need to mention that, and I just hope people notice it, mm-hmm. pick it up, and have a wee bit of fun with it.
The whole title thing is interesting, because that's one of the big suggestions, and you can often tell when people are just starting. You know, let's keep it to the S106, because you know that's where we are. But you know, people are just starting. You often have that sense of, you know, assignment number one, or you know, those kind of, you know, titles that are very meaningless. And then as we get to know more. This whole notion of, you know, narrating your work and effectively telling a story with each post, then we get more creative with the titles that we use and how we get, you know, how just the title tells a story. I certainly find that nowadays with the, when I post photos and stuff like that or videos, you know, Flickr or YouTube, that, you know, I do often take time to think about, you know, the title and what is it that, you know, I want, you know, the sort of kernel of idea, or what is it that I wanted to say, kind of thing.
Yeah. Rochelle's blotted sort of tweeting along with us tonight, and I think her posts certainly have been some of the best instructional things that I've seen. That she, I don't know where she finds the time to put together posts, but sort of technical posts and describing, if you go back through a blog when she was just trying maybe to do some things at first, and every time she discovers something better, she produces a post that is incredibly detailed and really well worth reading. And I wonder if there's some way of catching a lot of these, because a lot of this drifts by. There's been so many posts on that go through the flow in DS106, and it's almost like it'd be nice to try and categorise some of the ones that would be useful to other people and pull them together in some way, so that you had a sort of tagged linked list or something like that of valuable posts for instruction, as well as the examples of thinking about things. You know?
From the point of view of the design of DS106, of course, we are always encouraged to create posts and then to post them in the assignment bank as kind of tutorials, aren't we? I must say that I am guilty of not doing that. So I have written various things that are how-tos, and, you know, and I know that there is so much, but I often will not go back and go, actually, it relates to this assignment, and here is a tutorial for this assignment. It's a skill. It's actually a skill in and of itself to actually create blog posts in that, you know, that outline all the steps in this kind of way. And I often feel like mine are never quite good enough.
I think the way you blog is I've never, you always get a different angle on things and make me see something, and I guess it's coming from different backgrounds and things like that. I find it incredibly valuable to read other people's takes and people who seem to me to be very fluid at doing certain things, at thinking around and seeing connections and things like that. So I think it's all valuable. It's all good stuff. Mariana, just to veer away from the blogging a wee bit, I've been busy this week with a blogging project of my own, actually, but I missed the thousandth daily create.
Oh yes, happy 1,000th daily create to all of us.
Yeah, and maybe could you just, what was it?
It was mixing. It was mixing up the images from Daily Create number 1, number 10, and number 100. Could it be 10 and 100, and then make up the 1,000th Daily Create that way, by mixing, you know, anything that you picked from those. But actually, people have been doing, we probably ought to have, checked everything, checked a few of them out. People have done all sorts of things, mixing different images, and we haven't managed to download from SoundCloud, but I know Viv Rolf at least has done a music daily, 1,000th daily create, mixing all of different daily creates that she has done through the time that she has been involved in the DS106. So yes, it was the 1,000th daily create, and we have lots and lots of different remixes of images. My one I found really interesting. I did it, and it was the first one I have done in a while, because I felt I kind of had to do one. And it was just really, I tried to follow the instructions exactly. So I went looking at the images for number 1, for number 10, for the 100, and selecting the images. And it's really interesting to go back and look at what different people have made and then try and think about how you pull it together into something that could be, a good celebration of the 1,000th daily create. You haven't done it yet, then?
No, I have
not. Oh,
yeah. And I remember seeing about 900 and something or other a wee while ago, and thinking, "Oh, that's number 1,000 coming up. That will be a good one. We should get involved with this." Back on the topic, as near as we get to topic, one of the links that you posted to do with this idea of blogging like a champ is by John Adele, Seven Ways to Think Like a Web. I don't know if you want to talk a wee bit about that.
Well, I mean, I suppose the detail we can probably post the link for people to see. But I mean, what is again interesting to me is this idea of using what might be the architecture of the web and the things that we do in terms of how we connect links and how we might use a hyperlink or how we might use data and connect that and offer that as a way of learning how to think differently. So the whole notion of thinking like the web is really applying applying the principles, as it were, of the using the web in a particular way to the way that that we think and to our presence, I guess, on the web, isn't it? And so there are seven. We probably can't go through all of them, but the first one that I think is very interesting is this thing of being the authoritative source of your own data, which is sort of like a way of talking about a domain, the domain of one's own that Jim and others talk about, which is, have a space where you control, that is yours, and that in some way reflects your identity, which I think is, it's this whole thing of your personal cyber infrastructure and, how do you create yourself on the web, which, and from there it kind of, it goes through the kind of how do you do that in a more detailed way. But for me, it connects back to the personal cyber infrastructure. It connects back to this whole thing about mediated identity. What does that mean to put yourself on the web? Who owns what you put in there? Have you had a chance to look at it? I mean, is there anything that sort of speaks to you about that post?
Yeah, I mean, I love the whole post. I think I read it some time ago and just had a brief look tonight. And what I notice is that at the top, John is now linking to another post by actually a friend of mine, an online friend of mine, Doug Belshaw, who works for the Mozilla Foundation, who has taken it and condensed it into three bullet points, which I thought were really good. And his three bullet points are: have a corner of the web you control.
Mm-hmm.
Work openly by default, and ensure your data is readable both by humans and machines. And that's maybe the hardest one to think about, but I think the first two are really good places to start. It is interesting to have your own place that you make a mess of, and it might not look as beautiful as Medium or the latest online place to sign up for, but having something that is your own, you can change it, you've got the rest of it. And the other thing is this idea, I think John Adele talks about the idea of having a canonical source for things. And I know he's talked about this elsewhere. So that's really maybe about not, and it's about all sorts of things, but it could be seen about your identity. The canonical source of my identity should be, in my case, johnjohnson.info, because I control that, I can tell people what I want as much as I want up there.
Yes. And you may choose to tell not just the what, not just in terms of the content, but in terms of how you tell it, in terms of the kind of the structure of what you create. And it's interesting, isn't it? I hadn't noticed that update at the top, but isn't it interesting because it's also an example of the very process that they're talking about, which is actually, here it is, a link to something, somebody else who's actually created a simpler formulation of my ideas. Have a read. And it's just at the top of John Udell's blog post saying, go somewhere else and have a read at that. So it's an example of the working openly, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is interesting. It's nice to see that. But linked with that, of course, is that one of the things I've been doing exploring the kind of, you know, the domains of one's own. And I found myself just what I call my toy domain. I found myself a domain to play in. And I've been doing just what you're talking about. And it is true, there is something really quite interesting, isn't it? When you have this kind of space where, oh, you could mess up as much as you want to. You could do whatever you want to. It's your space.
I think it's really important. And also, it's just a sense of this idea of having fun and enjoying yourself in your own place. And you can feel a wee bit more relaxed there than in somebody else's place, maybe. and that kind of gets me, I say, just sort of back to my day job this week. I've been working with a group of people, migrating a whole lot of blogs that are being used by pupils and teachers in Scotland. To a new service, and one of the things I'd really like is for this service to become a lot more open and people to get a lot more, especially pupils, to get a lot more ownership of their work and personalise what they're doing, which I think is a bit about blogging like a tramp is like a tramp.
Well, we can blog like a tramp too if we want to.
Yeah, it must be a Freudian slip if there was one. But if you want to blog like a champ, you know, taking control of it and doing it in your own way is certainly something I think is important.
And it's, I mean, I think, you know, there is something about this whole issue of, you know, who owns your data, who doesn't, you know, which of course, you know, we could have a whole program on that, really, because, you know, that the difference is huge, isn't it? Whether you're posting stuff on LinkedIn and what happens or Facebook versus, you know, what happens when, you know, you're posting in your own space and what you do with that. In DS1, as far as DS106 goes, I guess, you know, there is for me, there is a question about it because, well, you know that I love Tumblr, don't you?
Yeah.
And I'm afraid, you know, there's no space that I can create that will be as much fun as Tumblr for me.
Yeah. Well, and I think, personally, I think that's fine. I mean, I used probably far too many services, Twitter, Tumblr, own blog, other things. But I think having your own space begins the sort of understanding around the sort of literacy, referring to Mr. Belcher, you know, the web literacy to understand what happens. And, you know, you learn that I was looking for something, say, that I did 6 years ago. I'll be able to find it on my own blog. I don't think I'd have much chance in Facebook anymore of finding that stuff. And different places give different, to use a Gardner Campbell word, different affordances. And we just need to balance those. But to be able to make that call, you need to understand a wee bit about how the web works. And taking control of your own space to some extent, whether it's in your toy box or it's in somebody else's back garden, is part of that, I think.
I mean, you know, that was one of the things where I got convinced of doing it, that it isn't about having that space, because actually, you know, I've had that space for a long time. I just happened to get other people to design it for me and do stuff for me, because that way, you know, I don't have to think about it and it looks good, quotes, yeah. But actually the kind of learning element, which is the thing I suppose that we often emphasize in the S106, which is, you know, your Doug's third point in there about the kind of what's behind it, why it's like it is, the kind of, you know, what's the nature of the hyperlinking? What can you do with that? How can you, you know, change, adapt and do all of that? Even if I didn't choose to keep my toy domain when going forward, I have already learned an immense amount about stuff that I often take for granted and don't pay attention to, just because I don't have to. But actually, it's all part of it. It's part of your identity. It's part about, as you were just saying, about the kind of digital literacy, allows you to have more control, even if you use different spaces.
Yeah, I mean, briefly, just Rochelle's just saying you have to be aware of anything I blog because nothing is private. She's got work to worry about, and I think we're all in that position. Mm. And it's an important thing to understand, and certainly working with children and young people, I think it's important for them to begin to understand that, you know, you can get into trouble on the internet, and to think about what your identity is like. And partly for that reason, on I said I've got two blogs on johnjohnson.info. I've got one called blog, which is more education related, and I've got one at johnjohnson.info/106, which is DS106. And if you go to the second blog, you'll see quite a different digital identity. You know, on the first one, I'll have myself, a photograph of myself somewhere, I'm sure, trying to look as intelligent as possible. And on the 106 blog, I'll have my Jim Groom sunglasses on and have the endorsement of a doll from from a strange TV series in the 50s
now,
in America.
Now.
Yeah.
And
I love her dearly, but it's not something I would necessarily want to be brought to the attention of people I work with.
But it is interesting, isn't it? Because it's what Rochelle is saying, that you have to be aware, because even though you wouldn't want to be, you know, to bring attention to it, it can be found.
And, oh yeah.
And,
yeah.
And, you know, that, I guess that's to your point of what happens, you know, with particularly younger people and so on, the kind of making them aware of, you know, what is the impact of having, you know, that particular blog set up in that particular way. And is that, you know, is that something that you're okay with anybody finding, even if you don't direct them to it?
Yeah. Oh, certainly. And, just this week, actually, I was looking for a chain of command GIF from The Wire for the DS106 blog, but I couldn't find one that didn't contain copious amounts of swearing. So, I, you know, as a teacher of young children, I've got to just walk on by that one, you know. I could have made a funny GIF, but it might not have sent out the right message if somebody stumbled upon that, you know.
So you take time to think about all those things, because I mean The Wire is an example, isn't it? Because it's certainly not suitable for children. And so when you're creating all the stuff that you have been creating for The Wire, you have something in the back of your mind, kind of where you're monitoring, you're thinking about what is the sort of image that I want.
And I think, I mean, some of the things I'm sort of posting probably are, if somebody looked at them closely enough with a magnifying glass, they would maybe something slightly unsuitable for young children, but I don't think they'll find them. It's not as if I'm sticking it in the header. It'll be down a link to another site, to somewhere else. There's maybe the odd curse word on a graphic. But I'm pretty sure that any 10-year-old would be very, very bored before they got to that link by the sort of thing I'm doing.
But of course that goes back to this thing of, actually, you know, it isn't just about the nature of your site. It isn't just about the particular theme that you pick, but it is about understanding how might you structure, for example, your setup so that it is easier or harder to find, depending on what your intent is.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, we're out of time.
We've run over just slightly, a wee bit. So I'll just play out a wee bumper here, and we'll see people or hear people next week. This is John's radio bumper, final number 2.
DS 101 6.